This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 366. It's got chocobos. How cute is that?
Best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm the other one, Pandalicious.
And welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hey!
How you doing?
Hey, stranger, what's up?
I know, it's been like forever and a day since I've seen you.
I know.
Forever and a day, I mean like a week.
Yeah, I know, like a full solid week.
Like, serious.
I mean, it's the holidays, I'm running around like a chicken with her head cut off.
It's the holidays, I'm running around like Oprah looking for some chicken. I said that, didn't I?
You know, I'm glad that you brought up Oprah, because it was a very interesting tangent that I want to talk about.
Oh, no!
Just briefly.
Oh, what have I done?
Just briefly. I know, 2 seconds into the show and we're already on a tangent.
It's my fault.
On my Facebook.
I'm sorry, Oprah.
On my Facebook one day, I pretty much just said to everybody, I'm like, hey guys, I'm totally running around and dropping off my little gifts to certain particular people, so look in your back porches and everything, but you know, I'm not Oprah, so don't expect like a lot. Like, these are just cute.
You weren't giving people cars is what you're trying
exactly.
to tell them.
I was just like, it's not much. I'm not Oprah. And then one of my interesting friends, Facebook.
Wait, so you have non-interesting friends?
Yeah.
Are you going to name them?
No.
Oh.
Of course not.
Oh.
Anyway, but one of my more interesting friends, Facebook messaged me, and she was just like, I really wanted to instantly like this, and then make the comment of, what? You're not Oprah? But you all look the same. But, you know, in recent, you know, Facebook society, a lot of people are ready to jump on you whenever you say anything slightly racial.
Right.
You know, and she's like, and I'm like, well, you know, interesting person, I'm like, I'm glad that you didn't put that publicly for everybody. I understood what you meant. I know you don't mean that in a negative way. I would have laughed, but everyone would have come down on you like a plague of locusts.
Yeah, that's true. That's some truth.
Let's just have our private Facebook hee-hee right here.
And that's what Facebook message is for. So you can have your private hee-hee that's not on your wall. Like, some stuff that people be putting on their walls, I'm like, that really should have just been between you and somebody else.
You and person B.
And you could have avoided, like, so much drama. Because, frankly, let's face it, Facebook is the largest trolling spot, second only to 4chan.
Oh god, 4chan trolls. 4chan trolls.
And Reddit.
And Reddit trolls.
Okay. Now, Reddit, more often than not, trolls for the betterment of people?
You would hope.
No, more times than not. Like, there are people that are getting caught doing, like, mad, illegal things by Redditors.
I mean, Reddit was the one who found the guy from the Boston bombing.
Okay. And the Reddit people were the ones who found the license plate number and reported it to police of that guy that had that horrible multi-car accident in Chicago. So, Redditors, you know, for all the bad...
Oh my god,
Redditors
have to regulate.
Redditors are basically, like, internet vigilantes.
Mount up.
I like that. Regulators. Reddit regulators. Can we do something? We can't do
anything. We can't, but we wish we could.
We really wish we could, because that would be some shit.
But that was my tangent, so...
It's a good tangent. I mean, because it's a good tangent.
I felt like it's a lesson that we could all learn in our humility. To learn not to put everything on fucking Facebook.
Yeah, try to keep it off Facebook.
Like, have your private hee-hee moment, and then move on to the next person who decides that they're going to post their breakup on Facebook.
That's
and
why it's called a private moment.
And then chime in.
So you're not Oprah.
Nope.
You don't look like Oprah.
I don't have Oprah money.
None of us have Oprah money. Yeah, I said don't none. Because we don't. None of us have Oprah money.
But the moral of the story is, people,
gift giving is a beautiful thing.
It's a great thing. And don't be a horrible troll person on the internet. Don't put
things... If you're going to troll, troll for good.
And if you're going to put your personal dirty laundry on Facebook, don't be upset when people decide that they're going to comment and be real with you, and then you don't like it.
And just be trolling.
Like, don't look for someone to be the dick, so you can be like, oh my god, that person's being a dick. Well, you put your shit out there, and that person's like, I don't believe that you were in the right, and I'm going to tell you that, and then they're a dick. It doesn't make no sense.
Yeah, so, it make no sense.
So this holiday season, give me the gift of not being a troll on Facebook. That would be the best gift you could ever give me. That's not true. That'd be an Xbox One and PS4.
Yeah, we all know that would be the best gift.
That would be the best gift, but that's never going to happen. So it's okay. Moving right along. We're going to talk a little bit about the Ash question of the week.
Ash question!
Which I did promote a lot better than I have in the previous month.
Hooray!
So the Ash question was, were you disappointed with this year's VGX? We got 3 responses. I think you guys kind of already know where I sit.
The answer was, yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah.
But let me, I have the 3 right here, and I'm going to start with our friend Flacco Jones.
Flacco Jones!
And he responded with, I was disappointed with the show, but agreed with a lot of the winners, especially Ni No Kuni for Best RPG and Bioshock's wins. I couldn't agree with you more, Flacco Jones.
True that. I think we both were in agreement that Ni No Kuni really deserved its win.
It got its just desserts. And I mean, anything going against Final Fantasy XIII, I wish we didn't do this again, and Final Fantasy XIII, we're doing this again, definitely deserves to take the win. So Redertainment, I finally got it right this time.
Yay!
Tweeted at me, it's a reward show on a Viacom-owned network. I expected it to suck and for people to hate what happened. VGX met my expectations. So obviously, he was disappointed. But
well, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, you know, there's always politics with any award show, right? Because you've got people in this private cabal that are, you know, typically voting on these things, and they're industry people and sometimes not industry people. They're, unless there's a People's Choice Award or a social enabled award, it's really not the voice of the people necessarily that are voting on these things.
Like the fact that VGX did like best, you know, character from a game.
Right.
Because they were doing that and that was purely people's votes.
Right. You know, and the People's Choice thing is kind of the bone that everyone throws us to kind of satiate
make you feel
us and
included
make you
feel
like,
in the
decision. Yeah, because everything else is voted on by a select panel of industry people that you don't know about. You know, that's the same for the Grammys and the same for the Oscars and things like that.
Like, they all go to the same, like, brunch meeting. Like, hey, what's up? You know what's going on. Yeah, we're voting today.
You know, so, I mean, obviously they are going to be political because those people don't necessarily represent us, right?
Right.
It's one of the things that, like, I really feel like there needs to be organized somehow a for us, by us video game award show that, you know, is completely open to voting by the public, and then the awards that are given are given.
We need to Robin Hood that shit.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I would love to make something like that. That you
take
know,
it from the industry and make it purely the fan vote.
You know, and obviously, you know, the one thing that the VGXs did show us was that you could produce and put out strictly streaming an award show that people would chime in to not only watch the stream, but engage with the content that's going on. So I feel like we're in an age where, you know, a community video game award show absolutely can't exist. And so I think, you know, like, I would love to team up with somebody and do one. I think it would be great because it's the piece that's missing, right? You have the industry basically patting itself on the back for most
of
our
shows. Oh my god, we're such a good industry. Oh man, we are the best.
But seriously, you know, you've got Golden Globes, you've got Cannes, you got Grammy, and all the different forms of that, the AMAs, the Oscars, I mean...
The ESH Awards, where we give each other awards.
Have ESPYs. We don't have an ESH Awards, but maybe we should.
It's like, the best podcast by two sisters in 2014 is... Oh my god, it's us!
Oh my god!
Oh my god, we just won! Oh, that's
I don't mean defeating. To nominate ourselves for things, although, if you guys are so kind and you love us, you can vote for us in the Games Hobbies category for Best Podcast on Stitcher, which we'd really appreciate.
Oh my god, I would just love, I would appreciate the nod.
I bet that you'll probably see on the Twitters and on the Facebooks and in every podcast post that we put out, links to do that, because that would be great.
Yeah, because we're on Stitcher now.
It would be kind of awesome to get, you know, some kind of recognition.
But anyway, let me get back to the last response from our...
I was trying to pat ourselves on the back.
I know, but...
Because we've been doing this for 7 years.
I know.
Like, somebody should pat us
like
on the back.
Like, that is a dedicated relationship for two sisters to have.
And maybe give us a cookie.
I'd love a cookie.
Cookie would be so good right now.
Anyway, so the last response comes from my personal friend across the pond, Kropotkin.
Krop!
I think he's still over at Spawn.
Yes! And doing the Sausage Factory, which if you haven't listened to that,
oh my god, I love the name. I'm assuming there's a lot of men there.
Yes.
Men with
you
sausage.
You need to listen to the show. Yeah.
And so he responded to it very humorously, I might add. It gave me the best chuckle as I was leaving my real daytime job. So to the question, were you disappointed by the VGX? Kropotkin responded as such. Do bears leave excrement in areas containing a large amount of trees and shrubbery? To which I had to think, of course they do.
Of course.
So of course he was disappointed with the VGX.
Of course. And again, because, you know, for all the ones that feel right with us personally, there are so many
that
don't.
Did not feel right at
all. You know,
all.
And that's why I say I think that there's a great space for more independent award pieces. And who knows, maybe we'll do one next year. We've been kind of going back and forth internally, and we're like, who would pay attention to us doing one? I mean, you got VGXs and all that kind of stuff, but I think this just goes to show that the space is open, so who knows? Maybe we'll team up with a couple of other community journalist sites, and we'll do a For Us, By Us award show.
Maybe.
It
I mean, I was pretty happy to see that they didn't put booth babes and, like, hot models everywhere on VGX. They did just give us dudes being dudes.
Which is great. And don't get me wrong, I'm not completely against booth babes, okay? I like eye candy, both in the babe form and the dude form.
I like hot dogs and tacos.
Okay? Like, seriously, what the only time that I, like, really have a negative reaction to booth babes is when it's just there for being there, like, they don't know anything about the character that they're dressed up as or the game that they're representing. Like,
they're all the ones that are only there for the check.
The ones that are only there to look pretty. That's and then there's so many of those. That's where I kind of have the knee-jerk reaction to booth babes, because there are a lot of games where, again, we're talking about fantasy, so I should have a fantasy vision of a character. I do like very attractive female characters in my game. I like them more when they have a brain and they're there for a good reason. But I have no problem with them being scantily clad if it fits their persona and it fits the realm. I don't have a problem with that. Okay, when I have problems with booth babes on shows, or when there's just a babe and she's dressed scantily clad that has nothing to do with the game. So it's literally just, here's some sex on a stick, basically, for you to look at. That's
here's
not related.
Sex on a string. Ooh, chase that sex on a string.
Exactly. And it has nothing to do with the game or the company that's
fun.
There. And then I'm like, oh, really? That really? That's the best you could do? Like, that's the most entertaining thing you could think of? Let's just put a bitch in a bikini. Like, that's when I have a problem with it. But if you have someone that's dressed as a character from your game, and the character from that game is scantily clad or you know, is more hypersexualized and risque, I don't have a problem with that. And as long as they know who they are and are trying to stay in character and at least know a little bit about the game that they're representing or the character that they're representing, I'm all for it, okay? I don't think that there's a more, frankly, from like head to toe thought of risque character than Bayonetta from Bayonetta right
now. And what did they do to Bayonetta? Like Bayonetta 1, oh, I'm this hot female witch, not witch, thing element that uses her hair to summon really awesome hair demons. And then Bayonetta 2, I'm going to cut all my hair off.
Yeah, but the hair is still used.
I know.
But my thing is that Bayonetta, concept-wise, literally just oozes sex.
Sex.
From the idea of the sexy librarian, yes, she is a witch, but not only, just from the way that she walks, you know that this is a sexual character. Yeah. Then the different attacks that she has.
Pleasure pony.
Exactly. And you buy into it, and you love it, and you enjoy it, and it doesn't phase you at all, because it all just fits. So when you see people cosplaying as Bayonetta, or you see Bayonetta at the booth dressed up as, you know, a booth babe, representing the fact that she's got her poses down, she's got the walk down.
Kudos if she has the accent, you know, that'd be even better. But I mean, that's a little tricky.
That doesn't always happen. But when we were at E3, the Bayonetta that they had an accent. That I can appreciate. So I'm okay with you being in leather, walking around, and being that character.
And humping people.
You're being that character. That's cool. But if you're, you know, a card tabletop game, and it's about dwarves, and you've got a booth babe in a snow bikini, my brain's like, what?
Well, gnome women do wear fur-lined bikini tops.
Yes, but your game is about dwarves. You shouldn't have a six-foot-tall model who doesn't know about the game and is handing stuff out, like, oh, you should check out our game. It's like, you know, a card game and stuff.
Right.
Then I'm just like, understand. Oh, come on, man.
See,
like,
I would put sex underneath a box with a stick and wait for someone to get trapped in the box. And then have a deep discussion with them, like Scrigner's box, whatever that guy who put it.
You mean Schrodinger?
Yeah, that person's box. And have a conversation with whoever I trapped in the box about what appealed them to the sex under the box when they knew it was a trap.
Nobody wants to get trapped in a Schrodinger box, okay?
Because then, is there someone really in the box? Or is there not somebody in the box?
No.
At least I understand the principle.
If you get trapped in a Schrodinger's box, you're both alive and dead.
Alive, because it's, you don't know. There could easily not be a dead cat in this box.
No. The cat is both dead and not dead.
You're not allowed to shake the box either, to find out.
Don't shake Schrodinger's box.
You're not allowed to shake it.
Don't do it. Bad things happen.
Because if it's a live cat, it's then pissed.
Stop about it. Stop it. Stop it.
Anyway.
Panda.
And those are tangents by Panda.
I love tangent trips with you, sis.
They take you to a magical place of
bewilderment
and wonder.
It is so magical.
It's that little space between reality and surrealness.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Anyway.
It might be. I don't know. So, with that said, thank you everybody for responding to our question of the week.
Thank you, you three people.
We really appreciate it. We've got another question at the end of this show, so you can continue to participate with us.
Stay ash-tuned.
That being said, it's time to dig into the meat and guts of this podcast episode. It's time to get to the nitty and the gritty. Guts. I was going to say tasty gritty.
Before we talk about our communal subject today,
okay.
I want to talk very briefly about a movie I saw, The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Go see it. Please support this movie.
Do you want to say the title again and say it slow so people
the
can know?
The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Thank you.
Ben Stiller acted and directed in it. It's better than Zoolander.
Well, that's not saying a lot. Dude, Where My Car is better than Zoolander.
It's better than Dude, Where's My Car and Zoolander. It's really beautiful. It made Panda.
But is it better than The Royal Tenenbaums?
Oh.
Yeah.
I would.
Is it better than Lost in Translation?
Those are totally different movies. I liked Royal Tenenbaums.
Mm-hmm.
I loved Lost in... So, in my mind, if I put those three in a room, and they said we couldn't leave it until I put them in the order of how I like them, it would go Lost in Translation, Royal Tenenbaums, Secret Life of Walter Mitty. But it is in that group. It is beautiful. It is stylized. Even though he, you know, transforms this three-page short story into a full-length movie, and obviously had to modernize it for it to make some more relevant sense, it's still really... really done well. It kind of reminded me or made me feel refreshed, like that animated short Paper Man.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Aww.
So I just compel you guys, because it comes out, I think, Christmas, just like...
And what is it about?
Okay, so...
You're telling people to go see it. You might as well tell them a little bit about what it's about. So The Secret
Life of Walter Mitty is obviously about our protagonist, Walter Mitty. And in the movie, played by Ben Stiller, he is a negative role manager at Time Magazine. And we're in the modern age where a lot of media, print media, is now being converted into digital media. And
it's done.
Right, but in this movie, it is slowly beginning to happen at this point.
Gotcha.
And Time is one of the first ones to get the, we're moving to online. And everyone at Time is kind of freaking out because they're like, oh God, what's going to happen to a lot of our jobs? And when you are the guy who archives all the roles, like the negative roles for photography, you're really worried about your job because, you know, digital cameras have made your job obsolete at this point. And he's been doing it for 16 years of his life. And it's all he does. He saves money. He works at Time. And he goes home and he has no personal life. And in the book, in the short story, he has this overly reactive imagination. And he goes on all these mind adventures to all these great exotic places. But in the movie, he actually physically does these things because he's looking for this photographer that only likes to work with him. And this photographer, played by Sean Penn, delivers his last roles. And And I'm submitting number 25 as the last cover for the Time magazine because it's the quintessence of life, and you would understand this. And Walter goes and he prints up the roll, and number 25 isn't there. And, like, people are like, we need to know where this picture is because this is what's holding up this, and, you know, you're going to lose your job if you can't get this stuff done. And he goes tracking this man across the world looking for him, and when he finally finds him, the photographer's like, you've had it this whole time. It's in the gift that I gave you because there's a gift. And I don't want to talk about that part yet. But it is beautiful, and it's refreshing, and it got snubbed by the Golden Globes. It got snubbed really bad, and I don't think it deserved that. So I'm putting my two cents down right now. It's a beautiful movie that everyone should at least experience once. If you don't see it in theater, so be it. I won't judge you, but please see this movie. And now I'm done. We can talk about what we're going to talk about now.
All right, so you've finished your PSA?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
I'm all done.
Okay. Right. Yay. Walter Mitty. I think there's a lot of movies that are, you know, worth seeing. For me, and I think for most of Nerdkind, Anchorman 2.
Yep, that, like, comes out on Christmas.
Done deal. Gotta make that happen. But I like the sounds of Walter Mitty because it sounds like one of those thoughtful movie.
Yes, it's, you know, very thoughtful.
That keeps you kind of pensive and makes you think about
things.
It made me
very emotional. And there's a lot of things I didn't talk about.
And that's not because you don't want to ruin it for other
people. No, I don't. But it definitely, I mean, it made me think about things in a different perspective. And as I was running to Buffalo Wild Wings to stuff my face with chicken. So it might compel you to go to
Buffalo Wild Wings.
No, it might compel you to think.
About going while to you're Buffalo running Wild Wings to stuff your face with chicken.
Maybe. But anyway.
I mean, there are worse things in the world to do. You could go to Arby's.
Oh, Arby's. I'm so glad we don't have those in Massachusetts.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Or at least in the area that we live in.
It's a good thing. Don't go to Arby's. You don't.
But anyway, now on to our communal.
Will you stop saying communal?
Communal!
It sounds like a disease.
Our common topic today.
Thank you. That's so much better. Because the other thing, every time you say it, I cringe.
Communal!
I don't like that.
Okay, I'm done. Our common topic today. Let's get to it.
Thank you. All right, so we've been talking a lot about video games.
Like, a lot, because it's the holidays, and people want to buy video games, and video game, like, accessories.
Related things, and peripherals.
And, like, movies, and books.
We've got all new consoles out for people to think about trying and jumping in on. Or attempting to jump in on and have issues with. And we thought, you know what? We are more than just video games here in the land.
Especially because in our title, we talk about anime, too.
Yeah. So we thought, hey, we should freaking talk about some anime. Because it's been, like, a while.
Like, a super long time.
Since we've talked anime. And I've been watching a bunch of new anime, both on Anime Network. I guess I should say more than both. Anime Network, Funimation, and Crunchyroll. Those
that
are
sounds
my...
like a menage a trois of anime.
It is, because, you know, different people have distro rights for different series. So there are some series that overlap and are available on all three services, and some that are exclusive to just one service or another, because there's no one provider yet that has that all.
But there is no monopoly yet.
I'm hoping that, you know, like Highlander, soon there will only be one and it will have all. But until Zool exists...
It will be called Metropolis.
I use all three to watch different things. I'm currently watching Freezing on Funimation. I'm watching Marduk Scramble, the second, on the Anime Network. But we've been watching a bunch of different things on Crunchyroll.
I finally watched Genkenshin, the second season.
And I've only been after you to watch it since
for, like,
I
months.
Talked about it.
It's like every time I see you and you're like, what have you watched for anime? I'm like, I haven't really watched anything.
I'm like, oh, you
should watch this.
Me. You're
and
hurting
this,
me.
And this. And then I'm like, okay. And then I go about my life and I forget that you did
that.
And
I gave Panda access to my Crunchyroll account specifically so that she could watch some of these things.
And what,
like,
does, she, what, and what does she do in response to that? She watches Diabolic Lovers and then cries when she finishes it because she doesn't realize why she tormented herself for 12 weeks.
Yeah, so of all the things that you could have been watching, you watched Diabolic Lovers.
And decided
which
to rape my eyes with spoons.
Horrible. And not watch any of the things that I've told you you should watch that are actually
good.
Fantastic.
Well, I mean, I got myself out of that by watching Genkenshin, like you told me to watch. And I was
yeah,
like, oh my God.
That's like,
I now wish I could see the whole first season so I can understand what all the callbacks are references to.
You know, it's such an easy thing to fix, Panda. And yet. And
it's so hard.
Yet you choose to just not
I go the
do
distance.
It. You choose.
I go the long way around.
No, you didn't take any way. That's the thing, is you didn't take any way. You just chose to ignore.
I went my way, which is no way sometimes.
It really is, like, no way. It's just not a way.
Panda's way or no way?
You did a thing, but it's not a way. It's not, and I really wish that
it's
you
like,
would...
hey, Panda, draw a blue box. I'm gonna burn down a house.
No, well, no, basically, it's like, hey, Panda, draw a blue box. You're like, ooh, did you know that back in 1987, I had a pet rock named Nemo? And that kind of sounds like Nemo. And I haven't watched Finding Nemo in forever, but I love The Little Mermaid. That's basically how you work, Panda. Yeah.
Yep. No contest.
Yep. That's where things go. And it's just so hard sometimes. And you're like, no, focus. Okay? People think I'm being mean, but I literally have to grab you by the ears and make you look at me to hear the English coming from my mouth, to stay focused on the English coming from my mouth so you don't sing Little Mermaid track songs, because that's what happens.
Actually, I thought about doing, now that you brought up Little Mermaid.
See? Here we go.
I thought about doing a spoof song about the life on Twitter. Like, Ariel's like, I want to see all the where the information is. Ask people questions and get some hashtags. Like,
please. Please.
What's that word again? Tweet. Like, I'm combobulating it in my mind, guys. And if I can get this done and on paper and outlined, I really want to make this a thing.
So, anyway, getting back to what we were trying
know,
to talk about.
You're right.
New anime on Crunchyroll, and there are a bunch of things that you guys should be watching. Today, Pan and I are going to jointly talk about Outbreak Company, but I am going to recommend really quickly a couple that I think that you should check out, just because they're so interesting, at least to me, and they're not Diabolic Lovers, frankly, which is...
It's a mess.
I think the just most horrible thing that I've ever watched.
Like, I like vampire anime, like... Vampire Knight was great. Rosario.
X Rosary.
Yeah.
That one's good.
Like,
I enjoyed Blood.
Yeah. Like, the niche can be represented fairly
I
well.
Like,
I mean,
Dance in the Vampire Bun, too.
Vampire Hunter D. Let's go back old school. Mm. Hello? Like, we have great source material. Stop making garbage.
Yeah, really. A lot of I've enjoyed a lot of different vampire anime as I sit here and we talk about it. You know, like I said, Dance in the Vampire Bund was also one that I enjoyed that you can watch right now on Funimation. But just stay away from Diabolik Lovers because your brain will just be like,
it was apparent. It's a game. It was a game initially.
And a light novel. And I've read the light novel.
And half of the time, the girl's being sexually assaulted, which is why the episodes were only like 6 minutes long because they couldn't even draw that. So a lot of the plot is never really exposed in the initial series because they can't get it past the censors.
Nope.
Not to mention, when they finally do give you that fake plot, I'm like, oh God, so she's the plight of all vampires? Do they resolve it? No!
No.
And no real love arcs were ever really explored because they all kind of have that weird, we're going to just brutally stare at you because we all want you, but we know the other ones want you too, so we're all just going to bite you forever. And, like, that's it. No discussion. None.
Well, bite and rape.
Bite and rape. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was pretty sad because
it just really shouldn't have been turned into an anime.
It should never have been conceptualized.
No, I mean, as far as playing the game, if you enjoy H games, I don't have a problem with H games.
Neither do I.
And it should have just stayed an H game. It shouldn't have been tried to be translated into an anime, now knowing the strict rules that they have about what you can and cannot show in anime. It just should not have been converted to that form. It should have just remained an H game.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just leave things in the medium that they're in.
Yep.
If you can't do them right.
If they cannot be permitted to exist in one medium, sometimes they just are not meant to exist in that medium.
Yeah. So, anyway, stay away from Diabolik Lovers. But things that you should watch. One of my favorites right now, which has a really long title, but I don't care, is I couldn't become a hero, so I reluctantly decided to get a job.
I've seen that on Crunchyroll.
Yeah, you should watch it. Surprise, surprise. It's really adorable. And the lead character basically lived in a realm where there were heroes basically fighting against a demon lord. And they were trying to find who was going to be the strongest. So there was this whole industry of, you know, working your way up to becoming a hero and leveling up and getting the right things so that you could try to go after the demon lord. Well, one day somebody actually took out the demon lord. And so then all the heroes were like, well, shit. We're out of a job. Now what do we do? And so they ended up having to get real jobs because there's no call for heroes anymore because it's all done. And so the lead character ends up working as a cashier in a magic appliance store.
Mm-hmm.
And hijinks ensue from there because the demon lord's daughter ends up working at this store as well because her dad's dead. She's got to do something.
She can't just live in that abandoned castle anymore and survive. Because
the castle isn't there anymore because they stormed the volcano and took out her dad. So.
Oh, she lived in a volcano?
Yeah, Demon Lord. So, you know.
I mean, apparently volcanoes are the hot spot for Demon Lords.
Yeah, you know, you hide your castle in the middle of a volcano, not a lot of people going to come up to your door. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's really adorable and hijinksical from there because she has her sensibilities growing up as a demon and now in the mortal realm, you know, has to adjust. And her guide is our lead character who wanted to be a hero and couldn't be a hero. So it's really adorable. It's definitely sweet. I wouldn't say super saccharine because there are definitely some moments of real plot and setup for sure. But it's really a lot of fun and a great 22-minute run, and the character design is very cute. There's definitely fan service in it, so if you're looking for something with a little more fan service than normal, you definitely want to check out I Couldn't Become a Hero, so I reluctantly decided to get a job. And it's on Crunchyroll right now. Another one that I'm enjoying that I don't think we've ever talked about before, I've even mentioned, is Gingitsune, Messenger Fox of the Gods. And this one is, I would say it's probably more in line with, if you took Inuyasha.
Okay.
And you gave Inuyasha, Xanax.
All right.
It's basically what you would have with this one. So it's all centered around this girl who is a shrine maiden, basically.
Of course, there's always a shrine maiden involved.
Yep, her family runs the shrine. And so because she is of the bloodline, she can actually see the fox deity that is the deity of their shrine and communicate with him. Nobody else in her family can do it. So she's the true successor for the shrine. And the fox deity is very laid back. There used to be two of them at the shrine, but one of them went off to go explore the world and left this one by himself. And he was really bitter about it, until he met this girl's mother, who was the true successor of the shrine at the time. And she just befriended him, brought him fruit all the time, and because she cared so much, he decided to take an interest, but he tries to play it off on the sly, so he's always like, you know, you're too loud, and you're such a pain in the ass, and we have all these things we have to do, but he's always chilling on top of the shrine and stuff.
Always hanging out?
Yeah. So, he's always hanging around, and she is always trying to help her friends and things that are going on, and getting guidance from Gin, but that doesn't happen, and they travel to other shrines, and because she is a true successor, she can see other deities, and so there are these twin monkey deities who are always playing pranks, and they get weirded out when they're finally able to be seen by someone.
Hey, and it's just, they're the monkeys!
It's very sweet and something to enjoy, but our feature piece that we're talking about today is actually a series that I've been trying to get Panda to watch for over a month.
Yep. Easily a month and a half at this point.
And not only was trying to get Panda to watch, but also recommended that it was a series that Eshmom would also enjoy if Panda would simply set Eshmom up to watch said series.
Yeah.
And the series that we're talking about is called Outbreak Company. Now, Outbreak Company is interesting for me because it's sweet and yet complex. So, Outbreak Company is started on the premise of there's a portal between modern day Japan and this other realm.
Things always happen to Japan.
They always do. And this other realm that the portal goes to, which was discovered completely by accident by the SDF, which is the leading military group of Japan, the Defense Force, leads to a realm that is almost fantasy realm. There are dragons. There are large creatures that are actually members of the community, like chocobos and
stuff. There are chocobos in this world.
They've got chocobos. So right there, plus
five win. There are chocobos and elves and lizard men.
And dragons.
Aplenty.
And dwarves. Panda hasn't even seen the dwarves yet, but there are dwarves. The dwarves and the elves don't get along.
Of course they don't. Come on.
They don't.
That is just in any standard medieval lore.
Okay, and everyone in this realm can use magic. So the Japanese government desperately wants to make friends and an impression on the people of this realm. It wants to utilize
their power.
So that they can
take over the world.
Basically, yeah.
Duh.
And so they've tried a bunch of different things to introduce to this culture that doesn't speak the language. They have to use these translator rings that translates the language of the Eldent people to the Japanese language so they can communicate back and forth. And they've tried all different kinds of things to bring over from their society to make a positive effect and try to bridge the gap between these two cultures, and it's
not
working.
Try to get them to hang out. Get to know each other a little better.
And so finally, they've decided, well, the last thing that we can do is maybe try otaku culture, because we haven't tried that yet. It's something that's unique to us, and maybe that's how we get through to them. So they put out this test on the internet, kind of subversively, looking to find someone who exemplifies otaku culture. That
the
knows
otaku
it inside and out.
Of the otakus.
Yes. The uber otaku, if you will. And that just happens to be our lead character, Shinichiro. So,
Shinichi!
So Shinichi is in his room, very much on a neat trip, just this shy of being a hikikomori, and passes the test with flying colors, gets 100%, and immediately gets a call and is invited in for this job interview. And because he doesn't have a lot of things going for him, he goes ahead to the interview and aces the interview. And the guy's like, yeah, I think we're going to give you the job, and this is what it's going to pay. And, you know, with your, you know, unique knowledge of otaku culture, you're perfect for it. And so he's like...
And the whole time, the main character's like, so what exactly are my responsibilities? Because you haven't really told me what I'm going to be doing yet.
And then he passes out.
He gets drugged.
He wakes up, and he's on this four-poster bed. And looks up, and there's a maid, and she's super adorable.
Well, you forgot that while he's dreaming, he's recalling some tender vittles from his life stream. He's having this dream of a time where he took the courage to tell this girl that he wanted to date her, and she was all like, fuck no,
because you're an otaku. Yes.
And, you know, so he's feeling ostracized from that. And then he comes to on the bed and sees a very beautiful, docile maid standing there aptly.
Yeah, pretty much if you were doing any kind of maid play anime, the epitome of the perfect maid in that.
She was only at 90% because she wasn't holding a broom.
Correct. And so he flips out and she can't understand him. And he's like, oh my god, it's a maid, and she's perfect, and, like, her boobs are perfect, and her statues, and the costume, like, the only thing that would make her more perfect is she was holding a broom. And so she's trying desperately to speak in her language and gesture to him to put on this ring. He finally does, and then they're able to understand each other, and she introduces herself as Miocello, and she's his maid, and he's, like, flipping out, and...
He's like, master? And she's like, yeah...
Because you're my master.
You're my
From
master.
Today on, I'm going to be taking care of all your needs. And like
all of your needs.
And he's
wink,
just
wink.
Like turning pink and blowing steam from his ears. And so you think that you're in for a super, super saccharine run.
Fan servicey.
This guy is going to build a harem because he can in this land. And that's not really what Outbreak Company is about. As you start digging into the episodes, you learn that this
land
realm
is split into classes.
It is. It's a class-based system, and it's not going to work. The lower classes aren't taught to read.
Or write.
At one point, Shinichi is going through the city and realizes that all the shops have pictorial signs because the lower classes are not taught to read or write, so they can only identify shops that they need to go in by pictures that are on the signs of what they sell.
So does an armory, like, show a picture of armor? Or,
yeah,
like,
it shows
the military
sword and
shows,
shield.
Like, a crowd of people being stabbed with big sticks?
Basically. The fruit store has a bunch of fruits on the sign, and seafood place has fish and all that kind of stuff. But as you start digging into it, you meet the Empress, who is a childlike Empress because she just turned 16.
Not that she looks 16. She easily looks 14.
Easily. I would even say 13.
Yeah, 13, 14
Her
tops.
Voice is very high. Petralka. And she's very, very jealous.
She wants your attention when she wants your attention, and that's that. And if you don't give it
totally,
to her, heads will roll.
What's the term? Tsundere?
Yeah.
Totally so. That. Long purple hair, but
and they're doing this weird fading thing with animes lately where they're phasing like the top of a crown being like a darker color and fading to a lighter color at the bottom or vice versa.
Yeah.
I've noticed that since, AKB 0048.
Yeah, they did it in AKB 0048. They did it in, what was that anime that you hated that ended, because she basically got to choose whichever path she wanted to go down.
Oh, Amnesia.
Yeah, Amnesia. They did that heavily.
Oh,
they
my
also
God.
Did it with Dark Rabbit Has Many Lives. That was the first one I actually saw it in before 0048. So, and that's another one that you probably should watch. That one's real deep, though. That one's
kind
of a little bit.
I like the sound of that.
That one's a little bit of a mind.
Amnesia can go and forget stuff.
But what I love about this series is that it starts off super sweet and saccharine, but what you get into is basically Shinji, through otaku culture, breaks down the class system, gets the Empress to agree to open a school where he's going to teach the otaku culture, and really in order to teach otaku culture, everyone there has to be able to read because you can't teach what's going on in mangas and they can't interact with any of the games unless they can read. So he breaks down that mystique and makes it okay for there to be playtime for kids, because in this culture, kids who are lizard born, that are not human born, basically, that are half elves or lizard men, elves or dwarves, the only way that they can get citizenship within the Elden community is that they have to join the military. So from the time that they're very young, they start learning battle skills. They don't have playtime because if they're not practicing their fighting skills, they're working their family's fields, bringing in harvests and things like that.
You know, eating and surviving and doing, living the struggle.
And through trying to introduce his otaku culture, he's able to convince the Empress to open a school and make it open to all people, all
but
the kids
I
in the realm.
I also kind of feel like, because she totally does help him open the school, but like the minute that he doesn't seem to be like focusing on her improvement in his culture and whatever, she gets really needy and
she
crazy.
She gets super jealous.
Yeah. And she, so I feel like she's harboring some like unspoken feeling potentially.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because
you're my new toy and I want you to love me.
Basically.
I give you everything. Why don't you love me?
As you roll into the series, that becomes a little bit more and more apparent because he spends a lot of time with Musaril and, you know, teaching her the language, teaching her how to read, because one, she lives in his house because he's living in a mansion while he's there. And she's his maid. And so he spends a lot of time with her and he really likes her because she's very sweet, but she's very earnest. And he has a connection with her because, like him being rejected when he confessed his feelings, Musaril is a half-elf, half-human, which is
the worst of the worst. Like, it's really, it's bad enough if you're all elf or all
really
lizard.
It's really looked down upon and not accepted. It's like she doesn't fit in anywhere. So interracial people, even in this culture, don't really have a place. And so he feels a lot for Musaril because
he
identifies.
He has a lot of empathy.
He does.
It's empathy.
But it's more than just empathy as you get further and further along into the series, which is really cute. Because there are things that he really likes about Petaralka, and there are things that he really, really likes about Musaril.
But they're the total opposite.
They
things.
Are. They're on completely opposite ends of stuff. But they're both very, very interested not only in him, but also in what he potentially means to them. Education into this new exciting world.
Social like change.
There's an episode where Musaril is getting ready to cook dinner for everyone, and Petaralka had summoned Shinichi, and so he's not home yet. He's still there. And she goes, like, into this zombie phase where she just keeps stirring this pot, telling people that she's sorry. It's just going to be a few more minutes. And she's, like, burned out the bottom of the pot. There's no food. Everyone's hungry. But he hasn't returned yet. And so she's just, like, in this funk because she has feelings beyond just, you know, he's my master. And Petaralka is the same way. At one point, he's teaching Musaril how to read, and because she can read and speak Japanese better than Petaralka can, she takes offense to that and basically goes on a tear at Musaril, which Shinichi stops. But later on in that same episode, Petaralka's life becomes endangered, and Musaril actually takes a sword to the gut for her, and that's when she stops acting kind of like a brat.
She stops
her.
Being a bitch. Because shit gets real.
And starts treating her a little bit more like a person. And Musaril even says that when she's asked by Petaralka while she did it, while she took that knife in her place, she's like, because I read Master's manga, and in his manga, there was this place where, you know, people of different statuses came to a point where they understood each other. And I just, I want to live in a time that's like Master's
manga. Please don't
tell me
she's talking about heaven.
And then she passes out, and that's the end of the episode.
That'd be
and
really
like,
sad. And that's where we stopped. Like, I haven't seen beyond that.
And that's episode 3.
That's episode 3.
You know, so I'm further along than Panda is in the series, but what I really like is that they've used this weird culture that is otaku culture to basically look at caste systems and point out all the absurdity about caste systems in this light and fun way, and because they've based it in this fantasy realm, it seems less scary, but they're basically commenting on current day gaps between lower, middle, and upper class. And I thought it was just so clever that they use the otaku culture as, like, the point of that. Like, at one point, they have their swimsuit episode where they all end up going to the beach because they're on break from school.
Let's go to the beach, beach. Let's go get a wave.
And so, like, all the girls have bathing suits, and one of them has a custom one to let her tail through because she's part wolf. And Petralka is trying to get all of her work done as the Empress so that she can go and join everyone. And she has set her high council on a mission to determine what bathing suit she should wear. So she's got all of her old, and I mean like, you know, 60s, 70s, 80-year-old council thought leaders locked up in a room, and they've got a fire going, and they're having this deep conversation about what kind of bathing suit the Empress should wear. And so, like, they're showing all the skimpy, you know, just barely covering the cleavage ones, and talking about, well, I'll see you there, but I'll raise you this kind of one that's a thong. And then there's this one guy who's like, but I know the perfect bathing suit for her, and he holds it up, and it's a school swimsuit
of with course her name because she's so moe.
And, like, and everyone in the room was like, no, 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 we can't have the Empress in that. She's a budding young woman. We must show off her physique, and you're such a prankster, and da-da-da-da-da. And so, like, it flashes back and forth throughout the whole episode to these guys working on it, and they get to a point where they are like, all right, we're not getting anywhere. We have to just describe this thing. And the guy's like, I'm telling you, this is the suit. And they're like, no, 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 no. So they start describing what the perfect suit is and how it would, you know, be one solid color to show off the strength of the princess, and that, you know, it has to have slimming lines. And so they start sketching it out.
And it turns out to be that suit?
Yes.
Of course it does.
Okay, but they know that the princess wants to wear something that, you know, shows off her womanhood, so they're terrified of presenting it to her. And the eldest is like, no, no, I've got this. We've been dancing around it all day long, but we know what our empress must wear. And so they bring the sketch tour and show it off, and he's like, it was these guys' idea, like, I was like totally against it, but this is what we think you should wear, but I'm just saying. And she's like, no, this is perfect, I love how it has my name across it. And he's like, that was my idea. And so they run a little thing. It was like, and he remained the chief elder all the rest of his days. And she shows up to the beach in her swimsuit from the school, and she's like, oh my god, it's perfect for her. And then she gets all upset because everybody else is, like, busting out of theirs. It's just so cute. And I love the cuteness and how they use the cuteness to mask the serious things that they're actually bringing up and poking fun at. Not only of the otaku culture, but also the class system stuff. It's really so clever. And that's what I like about it. So, you know, for me, it's just one of my more favorite animes that I'm watching right now. Like, I specifically hit up Crunchyroll Saturday mornings because I know the new episode comes out on Fridays to watch it. But you watching it, New Panda, what did you take away from it?
Well, I mean, for one, it definitely catches you visually right off the bat. Like, they want you to pay attention to the other world more than the modern world, because they want you to want to learn and align with the other world and what their plight is. So they do that very well. I would also probably say that I like how they are using otaku culture as the case study for that very caste system, the oppression, and the whole idea of evolving a civilization to a golden age, so to speak, for me. Because we haven't seen what Japan in this anime series' true intention is yet. Like, it's been kind of hinted at, but we haven't seen that tradition, that shift in the arc yet.
Right.
To see the real mastermind threat come into play and what's going to happen with that. I am curious to see how that buildup will go, because either they're just going to throw it out there and something very depressing is going to happen, or it's going to be like a meandering, babbling brook, and it'll be slow and you'll see it coming and you'll anticipate how they will strategize, you know, to counter it. So it has a lot of potential, and you were absolutely right that it would be right up my alley. And I mean, and they tease, or they like to do little callbacks to current animes that are playing right now, like one of the mangas that the main character Shinichi is reading with the princess is called Attacking Titans. And she even kind of recalls the plot at the beginning of Attack on Titan where, you know, Jaeger's mom kind of gets, you know, eaten, you know, by a titan.
Yeah. And stuff. Well, not only that, but when you get lower into it, Shinichi is a huge Madoka fan. Madoka. And so he has them not only watch it, but they also play the games. And eventually they get to a point where accidentally somehow video of this realm, them playing this soccer game, which the soccer episode is hysterical, leaks. And people are like, oh my God, what's going on? And so they decide that they're going to film their own behind the scenes of making a movie. So that way they can make it look like somebody snuck out video of a movie that's getting ready to launch. And so they then blatantly plagiarize all the popular animes so that when they put out the making of, that all the companies will claim copyright, so the movie will have to get killed. So that's how they can cover it. So they have, like, a blatant pretty girl transformation that's based on Sailor Moon, one that's based on Madoka, and Peltoralka actually plays Madoka in their remake. They do a scene from, I think a scene from Gravitation, and there's, like, literally all the current animes that are going around right now that are really popular, they plagiarize completely so that this thing will get killed. Like, there's one from, it's not another, but it was, Severing Crime Edge.
Ooh, all right.
Where Shinichi's running with scissors trying to get to Mirasol, and he's like, I need to cut. So he's like, kitty, 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 while he's running with these scissors wide open.
Kitty, 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 kitty.
Yeah. And so there's, like, blatantly, like, plagiarizing these little pieces from all different kinds of things. It's really adorable.
See, I can't wait to get to that. Because like, that's one of the things that I really liked about, and I know I'm counterpointing, but with Genkenshin.
Yep.
That a lot of the cosplayers are legitly cosplaying animes that are current right now. Like, and they're all girls in the second season, though there are callbacks to the original group of the circle. But all the girls who are cosplaying as Madoka. Or they were cosplaying as from a RPG, Atelier or whatever, however you pronounce
Atelier.
It. Yeah. And, like, and these are honest, legit, like, they're not fake, like, they're doing the right color. So, I mean, you know that this, some of these anime houses are going the distance in showing their appreciation to other works, which I think is wonderful.
Yeah, it's a sweet homage, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And I enjoy a bunch. And again, because it's so clever in pointing out how stupid classism is as well, I really am enjoying it on multiple levels. Not to mention, it's gorgeous looking, like Panda alluded to. It's got chocobos, guys. I mean, come on.
Chocobos in the trees.
Chocobos and dragons and magic and anime. Poking fun at anime and manga. What more do you need? Oh yeah, fan service.
I think we've come full meta in our anime, where it's self-aware of exactly what it is and what its potential is, or can be. Can be might be better.
Yeah, but yeah. It really has. Like at one point, and I think Panda like missed it in the first episode. Shinichi has a guard who is a chick from the SDF. Who basically is put into place to make sure that no harm comes to him. Because there's a lot of people from the realm of Elden that don't like the Japanese people. And don't want them there. And don't want their culture introduced. And consider them to be infiltrators. But he's looking at her and she is chestically endowed. And he's like, And he just says out loud, so you're a G cup, right? And she's like, no, I'm an F cup. Not that it means anything, but why are we even talking about it? And he doesn't hear the rest of her sentence because he's focusing in and basically out loud talking about and almost giving like a dissertation type like speech on her boobs. And I'm like, I like this. I like where you're going. I see what you did there. It's ninja approved.
Ninja approved.
But there are also a couple of other series that you should be watching. And one of them, I will say right now, if you do nothing else after watching Outbreak Company, like we've now convinced you to do because it's that good, stop this podcast and go watch Kill la Kill. Because if you don't, you're doing yourself a huge disservice. Huge! It's so...
All right, then I have to leave. The show right now.
No, you can't leave the show right now.
Why not?
Because we have to finish. We have to do the outro. You have to ask the question.
But
then,
you just told everybody else to leave.
Yeah, but not you. You have responsibilities.
Man.
They don't have responsibilities. They're being entertained right now. You have a job to do, Panda.
Okay.
So finish your job, then go have super happy fun time.
Fine.
All right, so as I was saying, Kill la Kill, you need to watch that. The lead character gets power from a suit that barely covers her body, and it uses her blood in order to sustain itself. She's on a quest for vengeance because she wants to know who killed her dad. It was a woman that used these red scissors as a weapon. She has half the scissors. She's looking for the other half. She has to fight people in these Kamui suits at school, and different stars that they have indicate the different ratings of power that they have. And basically... there's a bunch of fighting. It pokes fun at itself, but the action is ridiculous. It is so much fun to watch. It's a short episode, but man, oh man, is it packed full of stuff. There's this one character who's basically your friend, and so she's living in the slums with her and her family, and her parents work a ridiculous amount of jobs, and she's always eating, but always getting herself in trouble that she has to be bailed out of. And is super hyper, and half the time nobody listens to her, but she's constantly getting herself in situations where people are, like, about to kill her.
Okay.
And she's just super positive that things are all going to work out, and it's going to be okay, and she's going to be able to eat soon.
Oh, I don't like the sound of that.
It's hysterical. So that's what we got. Anime, guys! Huh? It's been a while, but it feels so good.
It does.
We'll be back next week with our final, hey, what we want for Christmas, because it's going to be Christmas. So.
And I actually kind of feel like we've only got two more shows for 2013. We're coming up on a new year soon.
You kind of feel.
Well, I feel that we only have a limited amount of time with you left in 2013. As we approach the new year.
Well, I think we only have one show left in 2013, because doesn't the other one, by the time it airs, won't
it be 2014? Actually will be 2014.
So,
that's, yeah.
I mean, I don't have a calendar in front of me, but I have a feel like, no, it'll just be turning 2014.
You're right.
Because our final show of 2013 is the last day of 2013. It'll be December 31st, New Year's Eve. It's when it will go out. So we only have two left before it's a new year. New you. New us.
Wow.
Electric Sisterhood. I know, I was like deep for a minute, right?
That was
right?
Very deep.
But it was like, oh man, wrap your brain around that. So, now's the time on the podcast where I get to turn to my sister.
Hello.
And say, we're getting ready to get out of here. Don't you have a question that you want to ask the people?
Yes, I do. It's the S question of the week.
I gave you, like, the perfect throw. What happened there?
I had a woman fuzzy moment in my brain, and I came out of it just a couple seconds too late. Well, I'm going to stay in the vein of, yo, it's holiday.
What? It's holiday.
In case you didn't know, it's holiday season.
It's the season to be sneezing.
And my question for you guys is
your question are?
My question
really?
Are
your question
this.
Are this.
What are this? No. My S question of the week is, what is the geekiest gift you have given?
Ooh. Like ever, like, or like this holiday?
Like, let's say ever.
Okay. What's the geekiest gift you've ever given someone? I like that. That's a good one. I'm gonna have to think about that. for next week.
Yes.
Sharing.
I definitely agree.
But how can people share their answers to your questions, sis?
Several ways. One, on Facebook.
Facebook!
I will leave a lovely little picture and rehash the question. Over on Twitter, you can answer it by putting your response and then using the hashtag #EshQuestion. You can obviously go to Vogue, the Vogue Network, where we also air our podcast on Tuesdays.
What?
And drop your comment on the feed, the feed page, when that goes live.
Go to
live
the page to listen to our podcast and comment and answer the question.
So, like, three ways.
So many ways you can engage.
We give you three different choices.
Yes. And like she said, the first one is by going to our Facebook page, facebook.com/landofesh, and look for the Land of Esh question, which will be on the page for you to find.
Super
comment,
easy.
Answer. Boom, shakalaka-laka. You can engage with us on Twitter by going to our page, twitter.com/ESH News, and tweet at us using the hashtag #EshQuestions. Use our handle, makes it easier for us to find. And, you know, you can always get a hold of us on the interwebs pretty much anywhere. You can message me individually, or Panda individually, or, man, there's so many ways. Just keep it simple. Hit us up on Facebook or hit us up on Twitter.
Boom. Keep it simple, silly.
Silly billies. But also make sure that you're taking time out to read some of the other great things that we're coming up with on the internet, like the stuff that we write about, our reviews and previews, over at our website, www.egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. The whole team puts up reviews and previews there, so make sure that you check them out. We love reviewing games. As you guys know, it's our lifeblood. Check out our articles over there. You can catch our podcast in all kinds of places on the Vogue Network, in iTunes, by searching for Eshcast, E-S-H-C-A-S-T, or Electric Sisterhood. Either on the podcast application on your iOS device, in the iTunes Music Store, or the Microsoft Store by searching for us. We're all over the interwebs. I mean, there's no place you can turn and not hit us. We're even on Stitcher now. Finally, it has happened. It's a Christmas miracle. You can go on to Stitcher, search for Electric Sisterhood, and you can catch us over there. Make sure that you do that. And if you're so inclined, because you like us so much, vote for us in the Stitcher Awards. We'd like to win a podcast award.
It would be nice.
You know, we haven't really gone after any,
because we're really modest and shy.
But we want one now, so help us win one for the Gipper. So that being said, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we're out of here until next week, guys.
Happy holidays.
Ho, ho, ho.